And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Because I'm making my way back to New York City, and I'll be back in a few days, and been premiering a new major feature film. And then you'll see where I've been and what I've been doing. But today we have a lot on health and healing, including how tango dancing benefits Parkinson's patients. Also today, we should stop calling the TPP a trade agreement. It is not. It is instead a corporate and investor rights agreement, which means it's all about benefiting them. It's all done in secret. We had no input on it, anyone, except the 500 to 600 lobbyists who were part of drafting it. And when you watch it, look at it now, if you're a legislator, you have to go down in the basement there. You cannot take any notes. You can't photograph it. And why isn't the media outraged? Why aren't the general strike? Oh, I forgot. They've been compromised. It is just deplorable what is going on right now. So we'll deal with that. Also, when is a felony not a felony? Well, when you're a bank. In fact, just last week, J.P. Morgan, a criminal organization, Citigroup, a criminal organization, Barclays, a criminal organization, and the Royal Bank of Scotland, a rotten-to-the-core criminal organization, all pled guilty to felony charges. That means they were found guilty of conspiring to manipulate currency prices, and UBS pled guilty to manipulating benchmark interest rates. These are as bad as they get. These are the kind of things that the mafia would do, the cartels would do, and yet not a single person will go to jail. No reputation will be adversely affected. They'll pay fines, and they'll get a clean bill of health, and we will end up paying a lot of that fine for them because they're going to deduct that from their taxes. Also today, I began yesterday by giving an overview, a historical overview of the most dangerous organization in the United States today, and that is the Federal Reserve Bank. We do not need it. We shouldn't have it from its very it has been meant to protect the interest of the very wealthy bankers. And today, it's done just that. But it doesn't help us. And I will challenge any economist to come on this program, Paul Krugman, any of you. You all have erred, in my opinion, by suggesting that we had to bail them out. And I'm saying, prove it. Show me and this audience where had we allowed these banks to go through structured bankruptcy, all of them, every single one, and have their stockholders take the loss, which is a part of the free market system. You get the benefit of your reward, but do you not also have to bear the burden of your losses? Instead, we their expenses. They had no losses. We made good on everything through the Federal Reserve. So, where do they help us? Now, their exotic stock derivatives, they don't help us. And there's $505 trillion of those in the world right now. That's a huge bubble and toxic in the maximum. So I believe that we should allow every single corporation and bank, no matter what the circumstances, to go bankrupt, let the people invested take their losses, as is supposed to happen, and then let the public focus on putting their money into non-criminal organizational banks and start over. So you'll hear part two of that today. Let's begin. We have a lot to share. I have some friends who are tango dancers, not professionally. They just love doing it. And they say it benefits them tremendously, emotionally, and keeps them young. Well, they're actually right. According to McGill University, quote, dancing the Argentinian tango could have potential benefits for people at certain stages of the development of Parkinson's disease, according to the findings of a new study by researchers at Montreal Neurological Institute and Hospital. And that's what they found. The study looked at whether a social and physical activity linked to music, such as tango, could have possible therapeutic value with Parkinson's patients And, of course, Parkinson's, as people in this audience know, you start to lose your motor functions, tremors, rigidity, gait dysfunction, loss of balance, and as well as from non-motor symptoms such as depression and fatigue and cognitive degeneration. Well, they took a group of men and women with idiopathic Parkinson's disease. They participated in the study, and they involved studio classes with two professional dance teachers and to show them the movements. And, quote, there's accumulating evidence that habitual physical activity is associated with a lower risk of developing Parkinson's, which suggests a potential slowing of Parkinson's progression. And that's what they found in this study. So I would suggest that this would also be good for people with Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis. Now, let's say you don't do the tango, you could do other dances, but get your body moving. Now, for those of you who've been consuming your different powders that are vegetable or fruit, really good study out of Louisiana State University and the University of Pennsylvania. Two studies just published today in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. Blueberry powders show endothelial benefits. Quote, smoothies containing blueberry powder may improve with metabolic syndrome. So, what does that mean in language? It means that we have a nation that is literally at a pandemic level of pre-diabetic or diabetic conditions, metabolic problems. Now, if you add in the people with heart disease, add in people who are overweight and with high blood pressure and elevated cholesterol, then you're at over two-thirds of the entire American population. We are the sickest nation in the world in the number of people we have compared to the diseases we have, especially since we're affluent. And we are dead last of all developed countries in the world when it comes to our health. Kind of interesting when you consider how much we spend on disease. This year it'll be over $3.5 trillion. And what do we have to show for it? So along comes a simple fruit, a blueberry. And in this case, they dried it into a powder and they fed it to people. And it made a big difference. Quote, the data published in Nutrients indicates 73% of participants in the blueberry powder group experienced improvements of endothelial function. Okay, what does that mean? Let's go back about 3 months ago where I did a whole discussion on the endothelium. That's the single lining of our arteries. And when that's damaged, inflammatory markers that can come from eating a hamburger or french fries, some alcohol or sugar, then little lesions. Just imagine like all athletes. We're always, if we're athletes, we're going to have cuts and bruises and scrapes, and it's just the normal part of things. And you don't think much about it because your body ultimately heals. But you look at an athlete's legs that's playing soccer, and you'll see a lot of these little kind of scratches. On the outside, it'll heal, but there's always a scabbing. Now, imagine that on the inside where you don't see it, but there's still a scab. And then on that scab collects cholesterol and ceroid pigments and other fats, and then that narrows the artery. So the more damage you have to your epithelium, the more likely you are to have a heart attack or a stroke. So having a healthy epithelium is literally tantamount to having a healthy heart. So have your blueberries organic and fresh, thaw them if you got them frozen, a concentrate, you even get more, or the powder. In this case, use the powder. But it works, and it helps you. Why? Because we know that they have flavonoids, and including anthocyanins, and those are part of our healing process. And that was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Now, separately, we now find from a good study at the University of California, San Diego, more anti-inflammatory genes means longer lifespan for mammals. Quote, we age in part thanks to friendly fire from the immune system, inflammation and chemically active molecules called reactive oxygen species that help fight infection, but also wreak molecular havoc over time, contributing to fragility, disability, and disease. then it goes on to talk about this particular study, measuring it. Okay, here is the takeaway message. We all are going to experience inflammation. You can't help it. If you're an athlete, you're going to get inflammation in your muscles, inflammation in your joints, but you heal, and you heal quickly, depending upon your diet and amount of water and antioxidants, and anti-inflammatory foods, nutrients, like celery, lemon, apple, cucumber, beet, all anti-inflammatory, help you recover. But not everyone who takes in something that's pro-inflammatory then reverses it with anti-inflammatory. So you end up with the negative of oxidative stress, but you don't end up turning off the inflammatory mechanism. And in time, in effect, you end up with an accumulation of these genes that are defective, and you die sooner. So the takeaway message, we all are faced with inflammation. That's fine. That's normal. We all are going to have oxidative stress. Just breathing, you create oxidative stress. Running around a track, you create a lot of it. Okay, but it can be easily compensated for. If I go for a run around the park in that 6 miles, I'm helping my heart. I'm lowering the beats per minute in my heart that can add 10 to 15 years onto my lifespan. I'm reducing body fat and burning the toxins in that body fat. I'm creating the endorphin, good feel-good hormone, so my temperament, mood is going to be much better, much more even throughout the next 6 hours. And I'm increasing the elimination within my system, as with anyone else, meaning you're less likely to be congested and constipated. So you see, that's all good. But you also create oxidative stress, which is pro-inflammatory, which is bad. So when you take your vitamin C and vitamin E and magnesium and hawthorn and coenzyme Q10 after you work out, now you have only positive. You get all the positive side, and you've negated the oxidative stress. Hence, your genes are going to be healthier longer, and you will live a longer life. So that's all good news. And a good study out of University of Porto in Portugal, pesticide exposure contributes to heightened risk of heart disease. That's a negative. And this was published in the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And what it says quite simply was that pesticide exposure that the average American pays no attention to. In fact, when you live in these gated communities on the golf courses, they use tremendous amounts of pesticides, but people don't pay attention because it's generally done at night or it's done in the mornings. Or when you live in cities, they use helicopters to spray pesticides. And again, it's generally done out of sight, out of mind. But just be aware, quote, pesticide exposure, not obesity alone, can contribute to increased cardiovascular disease risk and inflammation in premenopausal women. That's according to this study. So there's two ways of dealing with this in a positive way. One is to become aware of it. If I'm aware that my exposure to pesticide increases my risk of heart disease, I can look for those environments that I'm least likely to be exposed. Two, I can't move from where I'm at. Therefore, I have to compensate. So I will try to put air purifiers in my home or office. They're not that expensive, and they're very good. And get rid of the contaminants in the air, including the pesticides. And three, I can take certain nutrients in my body that are known to help detoxify from pesticide exposure. And in worst case scenario, I could use chelation therapy and intravenous vitamins. Your chlorella and spirulina, the two green algaes, are great for detoxifying from pesticides. That's the latest on health and healing. Now, we're going to go directly into a clip to help better focus upon why the people who control our money control us. And it's only when you see the larger picture do you appreciate, gee whiz, this isn't right. And keep in mind what I had said earlier about when is a felony not a felony? If you and I were engaged in laundering drug money, we would be in prison for life. If you and I did anything that's illegal as the banks do them, we would be tarred and feathered and our monikered in our reputation. They, not a single person goes to jail because they control the system. Listen up to what this gentleman has to say on the subject.
As difficult as it was for me, I have come to an inescapable and profoundly disturbing conclusion. I believe that an elite group of people and the corporations they run have gained control over not just our energy, food supply, education, and healthcare, but over virtually every aspect of our lives. And they do it by controlling the world of finance, not by creating more value, but by actually controlling the source of money. When I followed the money, I found that it took me up the levels of a pyramid. Here we are at the bottom level going about our daily lives. Above us is government, people who are given a monopoly on force and use it to tax and control us whether or not we agree. But who controls them? At the next level are the corporations. Many would say that it is now corporations and not nation states that rule the world. They call it a corporatocracy. To acquire the world's resources and control the markets, this corporatocracy must have access to cheap money. The big corporations get their loans at special rates from the big banks, which means that those who control the major banks, the moneyed elite, ultimately control the corporations. As I've followed the money, I've learned that almost everything I once believed about money is simply not true.
It's interesting how few questions we actually ask about very everyday things, like when we go into a bank and we ask for a loan of, say, $50,000, £50,000, what actually happens? You see, most people live their lives based on a kind of vague image of what happens. What actually happens is you ask for £50,000, they type into your account £50,000. That's all they do. They don't mint any coins, they don't print any money, they don't move any precious metal anywhere. They just put £50,000 into your account on a computer screen. From that moment, you start paying interest on money that has never, does not, and will never exist.
It turns out that banks actually have about 9 times as much money loaned out as they have on reserve in their vaults. This is possible because of what's referred to as fractional reserve lending. The way it works is that the Federal Reserve, or the central bank in any country, is legally allowed to determine the amount a bank must have on reserve. In the U.S., it's currently around 10%. So if you deposit $10,000 into the bank, the bank sets aside 10%, or $1,000, and then loans out the rest of your money. The way it works is, say another person comes into the bank and asks for a car loan of $9,000. At this moment, the bank loans out the $9,000 from your original deposit. It isn't there anymore. The borrower then pays the person selling the car, and they go deposit the money into another bank, which is part of the same central banking system. This $9,000 is treated as a new deposit, and the process continues. The money gets redeposited and reloaned until the initial deposit of $10,000 becomes $100,000. The banking system just created $90,000 by loaning out your money. Apparently, it began with the goldsmiths in the 17th century when people were trading in gold. Gold was heavy to carry around, so people stored the actual metal in vaults and traded receipts instead. Those receipts were the first paper money. Since only a few people would withdraw their gold at any given time, the vault owners, basically the new bankers, began creating receipts for more metals than they actually held. They loaned out those receipts and charged interest on money, gold, that they didn't really have. That's how our so-called fractional reserve system was born. In this system, the bankers get to make up money out of nothing, while the rest of us have to work hard to earn it. It has created a modern form of serfdom where the mass of society is now working to pay off their debt to the banks. Under this fractional reserve scheme, we inevitably become debt slaves to a ruling class of financial elite. Not because they are better or smarter than anyone else, but because they have rigged the system to benefit themselves at the expense of most people on the planet. Catherine Austin Fitz is an expert on this issue. She was an assistant secretary of Housing and Urban Development under President George Bush Sr., and then an advisor to the Clinton administration.
Let's set up a game of Monopoly, and you want to buy Park Place. What we continually do is just print money, give myself more money, lower the value of your money by printing more. No matter how hardworking you are or how successful you are, I can always...
So how come if you or I make up money, it's called counterfeiting, but if the banks do it, it's increasing the money supply? How did the banks get this power? This is Jekyll Island, where in 1910, representatives from the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Morgans, and other private bankers gathered secretly to draft the legislation that would create the Federal Reserve. Ed Griffin literally wrote the book on what happened at Jekyll Island.
Central banks are banking cartels which have gone into partnership with the respective governments in the countries where they operate. And they've been given monopolistic power over the creation of the nation's money supply. That's what the politicians handed to them as a gift, you might say, for the partnership. Now, in return, what do the bankers do for the politicians? They promise to create money out of nothing, now that they've got this legal power to do it, anytime the government needs it.
And since 2008, we've witnessed the greatest fake money printing run in recorded history. This financial sleight of hand disguises the costs, hides who's to blame, and leaves us as debt slaves working to pay off the bill. I found it revealing that in the same year the Federal Reserve was founded, 1913, the Internal Revenue Service was also established. An income tax was then instigated so you and I would have to pay the politicians' debt plus interest to the bankers.
The problem is we have a privately owned central bank system in the United States disguised as a government-owned system. Now, if you look in the telephone book here in the Washington, D.C. area, you look up for Federal Reserve in the blue government pages, it's not there. It's in the white pages right next to Federal Express. It's a privately owned central bank.
What is the proper relationship? What should be the proper relationship between a chairman of the Fed and a president of the United States?
Well, first of all, the Federal Reserve is an independent agency, and that means basically that there is no other agency of government which can overrule actions that we take. There is no other agency of government which can overrule actions that we take.
We have a private bank that prints money on behalf of the Treasury. The Federal Reserve prints money on a debt-based system, which creates scarcity. But it puts a group of insiders in a position of having access to all the data about the economy when we don't. So you have a small group of bankers who understand the data on how the money works in the economy, and it gives them the ability to print money in a way that the insiders are protected and everybody else is drained.
Catherine went on to compare a healthy economy to a vibrant Taurus, balanced, freely flowing, and energized throughout, in contrast to what's happening in our current economy.
What you have is a system that's very dynamic, and it's trying to optimize. But intertwined in the core of it, you have a tapeworm. The way a tapeworm works in your body is it injects a chemical into your body that makes you crave what's good for the tapeworm and bad for you. You have a parasite that's very much manipulating and engorging itself at the expense of the whole.
We live in a tapeworm economy where the financial elite are the tapeworm and they're feeding on us. And they don't like it when people blow their cover. After Catherine began exposing government corruption at the highest levels, the FBI raided her company and seized its assets. She was dragged through the courts for 10 years before being found innocent. So we've got the Federal Reserve, a privately owned corporation with a monopoly on creating money, but with no accountability, backed up by a government with a monopoly on force. The country got sold on the Fed as an institution that would help stabilize the economy and remain independent of politics. But in fact, in close to a century of existence, the Federal Reserve has done just the opposite. Since they took charge, we've been robbed through inflation, and the purchasing power of the dollar has declined more than 96%. And the wealth gap makes it clear most of the money is going to a very few. Only 16 years after the Federal Reserve was in power, America experienced the Great Depression. My research revealed that before the big crash in 1929, the elite bankers pulled their money out of the stock market. After the crash, they used that money to buy up cheap stocks and smaller failing banks for pennies on the dollar. Among the bankers who consolidated their wealth this way were the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, and Morgans. A similar scenario played out in the 2008 financial collapse, with the same bankers benefiting. In the years leading up to the collapse, the biggest banks, including Bank of America, Citigroup, and Chase, controlled by the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, and Morgans, were bundling and trading bad loans that they knew would eventually fail. It's like putting rotten oranges in a box and selling them as grade AAA. The bundlers of the debt knew it was only a matter of time before someone would open that box and see that the content was worthless, since they were the ones who packed the boxes in the first place. When the rotten oranges, what we hear about as unsound loans, derivatives, and credit default swaps, were finally discovered, everyone was impacted. People lost their homes, their jobs, their businesses, and their retirements. Meanwhile, the biggest banks who created the problem in the first place were the ones who got bailed out. Why is that? Why would the Federal Reserve give trillions to the banks, even though the majority of Americans were against bailing them out? And why not help those most in need rather than the perpetrators of the financial collapse? My research led me to believe that the same people who created the Federal Reserve, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and the Morgans, still control it, and they use this scheme to bail themselves out at our expense.
Many of the banks created are still the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill, and they frankly own the place.
Yesterday I mentioned that we had a group of legislators who agreed to support the Trans-Pacific Partnership because they believed it was an important treaty. It is not. And I want to give a little more information and give some specifics on that. That was Senator Durbin at the very end who said they own the place. We know they own the place. We've seen the results of them owning it. Let me give you an example. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is the most dangerous piece of legislation, I believe, in American history. It is a game changer for all the quality of life. I remember once saying that they had, this is over 20 years ago, that they were planning on putting chips in people as identification, starting with small groups and those like illegal immigrants. And these were about the size of a grain of brown rice. Well, are you aware that they're now actually putting chips in people? Well, I'm going to do a whole one-hour special on this with scholars and scientists next week. Who knew that? Unless someone comes to your door and says, we're here to put a chip in, you'd say, but this is all nonsense. But it's not nonsense. Right now in California, they're going door to door mandating vaccination. And what happens if you say, no, I don't want it? Well, then you've got the services agency coming to take away your child and to charge you of being an unfit parent or an abusive parent. So we have a government that's on steroids now. And it's a police state. So I'm trying to give you some of the idea of who's behind it, why they're doing it, and what we should be aware of and what we can do. So now we got this very dangerous piece of legislation, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And people are calling it, people are saying, well, you know, it's an important piece of legislation, and it's a trade agreement. It is not a trade agreement. It is not. Because none of us are really opposed to trade, depending upon what is being traded and what are the conditions of the trade. I'm opposed to trade if they're getting slave labor to do something and bringing in a dress, a pair of pants, or a camera that was made with slave labor. That, to me, represents ill-gotten gains, and I wouldn't support it. But normal trade, yeah. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a corporate investor rights agreement, not a trade agreement. Trade, it is not. It's all been done in secret. And now, why? Because if we knew what they were agreeing upon, we would be outraged. So here's what we now have. All right? The people supporting the Trans-Pacific Partnership, according to data from the Federal Elections Commission chart, shows all donations to corporate members of the U.S. Business Coalition for the Trans-Pacific Partnership made to U.S. Senate campaigns in just between January and March of this year. And it was $1,148,971, or $17,676.48 per yay vote. And there were 65. Then the average Republican received $19,673 for supporting the Trans-Pacific Partnership with their vote, and the average Democrat received $9,689 from the same donors. So that's how it works. And by the way, that was just 2 days before the fast-track vote. Obama was a few votes shy of having the filibuster-proof majority he needed, and Ron Wyden and seven other Senate Democrats announced they were on the fence on May 10th, distinguishing themselves from the Senate's 54 Republicans and a handful of Democrats as the votes this way. In just 24 hours, Wyden and five of those Democratic holdouts, Michael Bennett of Colorado, Dianne Feinstein, why should we ever be surprised by anything that woman does in California, Claire McCaskill from Missouri, Patty Murray from Washington, and Bill Nelson from Florida, raved and voted for Fast Track. That's the quality of character and caliber of the legislators. But Bennett, Murray, and Wyden, all running for re-election, received $105,900 between the three of them. Bennett, who comes from a more purple state of Colorado, got $53,700 in corporate campaign donations between January and March. And almost 100% of the Republicans in the U.S. Senate voted for Fast Track. The only two non-votes on Fast Track were Republican from Louisiana and Republican from Alaska. So they bought the vote, but they do that all the time. McCain, he received $51,700. That's how it works. So let us not be anything but naive. We cannot be naive about this. They bought our vote, and I'm concerned about it. So I'm going to continue to share insights about how we are being corporatized. We are being commodified, and what we can do about it. And there are positive things we can do about it. This is not just a bitter pill. We can start to do simple things that can make a difference. We can stop shopping in their stores. We can stop buying their products. We can stop watching their television programs. We can put our money in small banks, in credit unions, the Bank of North Dakota. We can also stop voting for them en masse. We can look for the honest, or as much as we can determine they're an honest, independent, populist person. Vote for the Green candidates. Vote for Jill Stein and the Rocky Andersons, the people that really care about people. And when we stop supporting them, then they no longer have that one vote. Now, when 1 million people stop, they no longer have 1 million votes. We have had at least 100 million visits of people downloading information, reading articles, watching documentaries, We had over 365 million search results for one film alone, War on Health, just recently. In fact, when I was at the lecture, I asked people in the audience, let's go through some documentaries, because we are told we only have one reality, one truth, official truth. If it's the New York Times, it has to be true because it's official. If it's the State Department and CNN, it has to be true because it's official. If it's Pacifica or any other source, no, those are alternatives, or those are, you know, those are extremists. Why don't you look to see if they're true? Why don't you just take a moment and ask yourself, are they telling us the truth? But they won't do that because they're afraid of the results. Because more often than not, those who are responsible within the alternative movements have the truth on their side. So I just wanted to show that they have controlled the media, but they don't control everyone. And for people who are progressive and want to know the truth, there are sources, resources by the thousands, tens of thousands, they can get. Recently, I was banned with Bonnie Faulkner, as many people in this audience know, from discussing vaccines. And they thought that was it. Well, yesterday, Global Research, one of the most powerful search engines in the world, one of the most respected, featured that story and condemned the people at KPFA. So they're not aware of, at one time, they could have done something and that would have been it. Not today. They're an insignificant afterthought in the world of progressive thoughts and actions. So today, there are multiple venues that we can use outside of the mainstream to get people the truth, whether articles, investigations, broadcasts, and calls to actions and documentaries. And that's just very exciting. So you see, as bad as it is on their end, it opens up more opportunity for us to share. And we are. Hundreds of millions of people around the world are sharing. Now, I want to take you now to a discussion by a gentleman that you probably have not heard before. In fact, I had to film him in Los Angeles. He's from Australia, and on the trip I was on, I couldn't make it to Australia. So we set up the filming for Los Angeles. It was one of those film in the morning and gone, but the information was so powerful that I've included it at the beginning, the middle, and end of a new feature film, Saving the Planet. And just to think of that for a moment, when I take on a topic, I try to take it on so I can be as comprehensive as possible. And I was wrestling with the idea, how do I take on something as massive as the environmental movement and to get people to pay attention to what we can do about it? And I looked at over 71 different sections that had to be addressed, like acid rain that nobody talks about. But when I was flying over Maine, you look down and you see vast areas where there's no trees. And it's not because they cut down the trees. It's because of acid rain destroyed them. And then you go up into the high country, and I like to hike the high country in the summertime. And you'll see now where there was dense, cool shade from hundreds of year-old trees. They're devastated. The heat has decimated them, and then the beetles come where it's hot, and now there's all this devastation of the trees at the high end and lots of fires up there. How do you talk about that? Of course, now people are paying attention to something that nobody cared about when we started mentioning it 7 years ago, the drought in California, the loss of water. And by the way, everything that's happening in Colorado is happening in Georgia, most of Florida, 90% of Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, Nevada, and Arizona. So we're talking about a lot of states are running out of water and will run out of water, but no one's talking about it, just California. And then nobody wants to talk about it. Today there was an article in the New York Times, they're painting their lawns. Yeah, that's a good way to deal with the crisis. Let's just disguise our lawn that it's not brown and dead. It's green because we just spray painted it. That's a good way to deal with a crisis, man, oh man. And the fact that you're on the Pacific Rim and you are going to get hit with some earthquakes and some major ones, and you're going to run out of water for at least 50% of people in the state will be without water in the next 3 years. So I'm wrestling with this. How do I deal with it? How do I deal with the pesticides and the dead areas of the ocean, which are now, for the first time, just last week, they found a gigantic dead zone in the Atlantic. They had never found one in the middle of the Atlantic before. And this is huge. It's like 1,000 miles. That's a big dead zone where nothing can live in it because there's no oxygen. And then it occurred to me, I can deal with every part of the environment with a solution that everybody could participate in. And so I went about writing themes in essay form and bringing in people who could discuss that as an essay. So instead of having 70 different films, I was able to do it all in one. I want you to listen to just one of the many people, and none of these other people in the film have you ever heard from before. And I want you to hear what he has to say and see if it makes sense to you. This is just one single piece of information, just one piece of information.
I've been asked to say a few words about the oceans today. Now, the great historian Barbara Tuchman defined folly as acting against our own best interests. That's folly. I believe that anthropocentrism, the peculiar belief that reality must be seen through an exclusively human perspective, is the most egregious and nastiest of all follies. If Moses could have spelt it, he would have put it in his top 10. Now, in human history, only 100 billion human beings have ever lived. 7 billion people are alive today. And we humans torture and kill 2 billion sentient, living, loving animals every week. And we stab and suffocate 1 billion ocean animals every 3 hours. Now, over 70% of the planet is covered with water. Planet Earth really should be called Planet Ocean. Now, the folly and cruelty of human beings out there in the oceans is simply indescribable. We are poisoning and killing the oceans and the animals who live there, out of sight and out of mind. Trillions of fish are ground up into pellets to feed to livestock. Vegetarian cows are now the world's largest ocean predators. The oceans are dying in our time. By 2048, all our fisheries will be dead. The lungs and the arteries of the earth. Oceans sequester more CO2 than all the forests of the world combined. 10,000 entire species are wiped out every year because of the actions of... And we now face the 6th mass extinction in cosmological history. If any other organism did this, a biologist would call it a virus. It is a crime of unimaginable proportions. Now, factory farms spew chemicals into the ocean, creating hypoxic dead zones totaling 1 million square kilometers, killing plants, coral, and ocean animals. The ocean bed today is a moonscape, and the sea is a toxic soup of acid. And we treat the ocean as a private pantry and as a public toilet. The Pacific gyre now is so full of plastic, junk, and human feces, it has created a floating footprint bigger than India. Cruise ships alone dump 1 billion gallons of sewage into the ocean every year. Trillions of fish are ground up into pellets to feed to livestock. Vegetarian cows are now the world's largest ocean predators. Necklaces of long lines, some of them 100 kilometers long, strangle the globe with 10 billion steel hooks, killing dolphins, albatrosses, and turtles.
Dolphins and whales are stabbed to death in the shallows of Taiji and the Faroe Islands. Huge bays are blood red. 100 million sharks are torn from the sea, their fins hacked off, and they're thrown overboard to die agonizing deaths for shark fin soup. Sharks have been around for twice as long as dinosaurs, 400 million years. Human beings have been around for less than 200,000 years. And we, an arrogant mammalian biped species with an opposable thumb, are going to wipe out these magnificent prehistoric giants in one generation. What a disgraceful legacy. Now, there are two peak predators on this planet, humans on land and orcas in the ocean. In the 20th century, human beings killed 200 million members of their own species. Orcas killed none. And don't expect any protection from your own governments either. In the 20th century, 100 million people have been killed by their own governments. Now, Victor Hugo said there is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. But I say there is nothing more destructive than a bad idea whose time has passed. The time for killing animals has passed, if it ever existed in the first place. You see, this is not just about animal rights. It is also about human wrongs. Animal rights is now the greatest social justice issue since the abolition of slavery. It is a more revolutionary event and more powerful than the Industrial Revolution, the Reformation, the Hubble telescope, or anything conceived by Galileo, Copernicus, Einstein, Darwin, or Freud. Because it protects the most precious of all things, life. Ethical vegans are on the right side of history. We are creating a new enlightenment, the second renaissance. Now, the most beautiful word ever written in any country at any time in human history came from India, from the Upanishads, 3,000 years ago. Ahimsa, non-violence to any other living being. In everything we think, say, and do. Now, I'm frequently asked to define myself, to put a convenient label on myself. So I describe myself as Ahimsem. And by definition, I must therefore be vegan. Not because veganism describes our nationality, our politics, our religion, our diet, or our lifestyle, but because it describes our character. It says we oppose violence wherever it occurs. Now, we all know the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, this actually predates the New Testament of the Nazarene Jew, Jesus. It also goes back to the Babylonian Jew, Hillel, in 70 BC. To the Analects of Confucius in 500 BC. The truth be told, it was inscribed on the human heart long before the dawn of writing. Now, our friends have seen our work on land, met our colleagues on the ground, and touched the physical structures. But no one knows about our marine animal protection work against drift netting, long lining, whaling, shark finning, plastic and sewage dumping, dead zones, and poisonous runoff from factory farms. So why are they invisible even to our friends? Because like all atrocities, the ocean is out of sight and out of mind. That is why organizations like Sea Shepherd and many others are so vital. Because they shine the spotlight into these dark places where evil resonates to the sound of the cash register. The so-called seafood industry is a squalid, obscene, taxpayer-funded scam. They are wiping out entire fish populations like a plague. They are open-cutting and clear-felling the ocean bed like the meat industry did to our forests. And ocean animals are being starved, poisoned, and king hit from all sides. And the dynamics are asymmetric. More ships, bigger capacities, larger freezers, spotter planes, sonar technology, toxic chemicals, richer consumers, bigger appetites, and dirtier governments. Versus fewer fish, powerless creatures, poisoned oceans, sicker animals, unimaginable suffering, fractured food chains, extinct, cruel wastage. So restaurants that dress up a dead fish, don't fool me for a second. I know they're in the business of putting lipstick on a corpse. Now, I have enjoyed a long love affair with cetaceans, dolphins and whales. And I'm not alone. These are iconic animals, loved by everybody. But these remarkable animals are in the crosshairs of the most egregious cruelty and abuse ever devised by reckless and greedy minds. And of course, gutless politicians controlled by their shady paymasters. So if you remember nothing about what I say today, at least remember this. If we can't save dolphins and whales, we can't save anyone, period. Not the tuna, not the albatross, not the cod, not the sharks, not the penguins, not the turtles, not the seals. And by definition, none of the other iconic animals on land either, the ones that we love so dearly. Not the tigers, lions, elephants, deer, eagles, koalas, or kangaroos. We can save nobody. We can't even save you. So let's get this straight. This is not a zero-sum game where the killer's loss is the activist's gain. No, it is much worse. If the killers win, we don't just lose. Everyone dies. The last paragraph of Irving Wallace's novel, The Prize, culminates with the acceptance speech of a Nobel laureate. Life is not a daily dying, a dust to dust, ashes to ashes. It is a soaring and blinding gift, snatched from eternity. Are we to be the species responsible for destroying the enchanted web of life on this planet, and in the process annihilating millions of other species as well, for 30 pieces of silver? If we claim to respect life, we must say what we mean and mean what we say. We must get off the meat, egg, and dairy drug. Now, even if everyone who watches this video becomes vegan, I would still consider it a failure. Of course, it goes without saying that I want you to become a vegan. But I really want you to become an activist. So let us all respect life in all its forms. The screams in those vile, ghastly gulags we call factory farms on land and in the ocean must be silenced once and for all. There is not a moment to lose. In his closing words in The Bonfire of the Vanities, Judge White says, "The law is humanity's feeble attempt at decency." Ask you to join us in a battle, in a war that decency cannot afford to lose. Thank you.
Okay, now you were just hearing one person give some insights, essay form that captures a lot of different topics into one theme. The entire film is this way, with just one brilliant mind after another throughout the entire film. And what you don't see is you don't see some of the most beautiful B-roll and nature shots ever. This is the most beautiful film and also one of the most important ones I've ever produced and directed and written. And it's having its worldwide premiere for one night only as a benefit to help our sister station in New York, WBAI, that's on hard times right now. So here's what it is. Write this down, please. It's June 17th, which is a Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. It'll be at a major theater because I wanted something that holds a lot of seats. The last one I did as a benefit, we had 35 showings, and this one is only one. One showing, one evening. The film is called Saving the Planet. So call this number if you'd like to join us. It's $30 for the evening. You're going to get two copies of the film as a gift for attending, plus the film, plus the discussion afterwards. And the number to call is 1-800-240-1494. 1-800-240-1494. Now, there's only one person today because we're moving our offices. Today, we're finally out of, after 3.5 months, we're out of our temporary office, going into our permanent office, where we'll hopefully be back to normal as of Monday. But for today, you can call this number and make a reservation, 1-800-240-1494. The film is powerful. It is beautiful. It's poetic. It lifts you up. It shows you what's going on with the entire planet. I mean, I've been able to cover the entire environmental movement in here in one theme. It's just how it was, how I decided to do it. And if you've enjoyed the other films, this one you'll really enjoy. Saving the Planet. Give a call, 1-800-240-1494. But there's one person only, so if they're busy, please be patient. Bill will get back to all of you. And then it's only 3 weeks away, and I'll be back, and I'm on my way back now, in fact, just finishing filming another film. I've been working on it. This one took years, 4 years to finish this one film. But wait till you see. I don't believe that you'll know a single person in the film. I want to get fresh philosophers and new voices and to deal with it in a different way, using beautiful imagery, visualization, and great philosophical insights. It's a poem to nature and to humanity. So if you want to support the station, this is your opportunity. You want to support becoming a part of an environmental movement and in a health movement can take back our power and take back our rights. This is the film, Saving the Planet. All right, 1-800-240-1494. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.